Chapter 4. Strange Goods. Their landing on Caligula, fifth planet of a star bearing only a number on the Imperial charts, was unusual for anyone versed in the ways of the Imperium. No planetary defences were in evidence. No voice came through the communicator, demanding identification or challenging their right to visit, or warning that a laser cannon was already trained on the ship. There was not even the personal clarion call of the local Imperial commander. A strange omission indeed. It was as though the world below, with its shining white clouds, basking in the light of its brilliant sun, was virgin and untouched by man. Which was not quite the case, though the planet was far from being densely populated. Only when Pello Caladan took the wandering star down into the atmosphere and went soaring over the landscape did a number of medium-sized settlements reveal themselves.
"Find the biggest one," Ruglow said.
They landed outside a straggling township on the shore of a storm-tossed ocean. It did not even boast a spaceport, only a large, rolling expanse of bare earth, which was scorched and blasted by the propulsion motors of vessels which had landed and taken off there previously. A few of these littered the field at present, battered and scored, pressing their landing legs into the earth. There were also some which would plainly never take off again, turned on their sides, half-crushed, dragged to the side of the field and left to rot. Caladan grinned when he saw these.
"Pilots are used to setting down on adamantium, or at least hardened concrete," he said. "This field isn't even levelled. It's like landing on a hillside. Looks like some people forgot what they were doing."
"Probably too drunk," Ruglow muttered.
Ruefully, he recalled times when he too had been obliged to land his ship on an uneven surface and had nearly come to grief. There was no custom shed, indeed no administration buildings of any kind, only a dirt track which led into the town. Caladan sighed and shook his head.
"Don't they care at all who comes here?"
"Obviously not. Just the sort of place I like. Let's go inside and have a look."
They clambered down to the main hatch, which Ruglow slammed shut. He took some care of the way he engaged the locks. There were no guards here, and therefore no protection. Or worse, shipjackers. Then he climbed down the ladderway and joined Caladan on the ground. The navigator looked on with horror as the trader turned away.
"No, no, by all that's holy, you've got to do more than that."
He almost pushed his companion aside in his hurry to reach the rune plate at the foot of the ship and place his right palm on the inlaid protective sigil. Closing his eyes, he intoned a prayer, while Ruglow stood by with a cynical smile. Finishing the rite, the navigator turned to him with a sigh.
"No wonder you're such a failure. You don't do anything at all to bring yourself good fortune."
Ruglow shrugged. The two looked around them. The sky was light blue, streaked with white cloud at a great height. The air was warm and balmy and had a resinous smell to it. A light wind was blowing. For once, the wandering star did not look out of place. More than a few of the ships on the ground had an improvised look, as though they had been bolted together from pieces of other ships, which was probably the case. What there was of traditional ornate decoration was crushed and distorted, the warding gargoyles, in some cases, absent altogether. The whole impression was definitely edge of the Imperium, a frontier. And yet it was deep inside Segmentum Obscurus, one of the five Segmenti Majoris with which the Imperium was divided. The Eye of Terror was a frontier all of its own. Then, Ruglow's gaze chanced on a ship near the outer limit of the field that was like no other he had ever seen. The first astonishment was its colour, not the dull, scored and pitted grey and black of any other craft that travelled in space, but a pearly white, iridescent with shimmering hues. It was as though the ship had passed through a rainbow and become smeared with its colours. It was hard to understand how such a display could withstand the rigours of space. The second novelty was its shape, not the heavy crenellated bolts and rivets of any other spaceship. This was sleek, as though if cast in a mould, and elongated. It looked like some elegant flying animal about to leap into the air. Following his gaze, Kaladin became tense. He spoke in a hushed tone.
"That can't be an Imperium ship. It must be alien. There are aliens here. Maynard, perhaps we should leave."
Ruglo smiled again. Having just overcome his very worst fear, Kaladin was now willing to go into the warp again rather than face an alien life form. True, for the average person, the prospect was frightening in the extreme. Aliens, all aliens, were mankind's mortal enemies.
"Take courage, friend. I've talked with aliens and survived."
They set their faces towards the settlement. Ahead of them lay a sprawl of hastily erected metal structures and large tents, whose coverings flapped in the breeze. It was a shanty town, which they approached along a single dirt road. Kaladin paused and had to be urged on at the first sight of the inhabitants who passed to and fro, rough, hard-looking men who cast feral glances, clad in a motley variety of costumes, weapons not holstered but carried in the hand or thrust casually into clothing, as if ready to use at the slightest provocation. There was no sign of law here, no arbitrators or police. If there was an Imperial commander at all, he was probably resident on another planet, taking little interest in the lawless world he nominally ruled. Instead, it was left to adventurers, hunters, freelance miners, and possibly pirates. Ruglo had a good feeling about this place. He felt a premonition that he would find business here. Not that he had much to trade with. Kaladin had once more put Simskin over his warp eye. He still did not like to be recognized as a navigator. He shrank nervously as they strode up a dusty track. This was not the orderly, fairly safe Gendova he had grown accustomed to. Ruglo glanced at the ribbed or corrugated sheet metal which had been used to throw the shacks together. Some of it, he saw, came from the industrialized worlds of the Imperium. That was easy to spot, for the Imperium metal forgers could rarely resist stamping a piece of bare metal with some image or other. Baroque designs, banners, flags, reliefs of cowled adepts or hideous beasts, or helpful runes. Whoever had built the shacks had little regard for any of this. Sometimes the decorations were sideways or upside down, which drew displeased frowns from Kaladin. Ruglo made an attempt to cheer him.
"Well, I don't see any aliens yet."
They came to where an awning cast a shade. Over it was a banner with a legend, "Drinks, Smokes, Stuff." It was the entrance to a drab red marquee. A hubbub of conversation came from within. Peering inside, Ruglo saw a large space, about the size of some minor cathedral of the cult of the Emperor. Parts of the overreaching canvas roof had been opened to admit air and sunlight. Tables and chairs had been laid out. On the further side, a long bar had been set up, composed of empty crates. The marquee was filled with men and women drinking, smoking herbs of various kinds, or simply talking. As in the dirt street outside, the people were dressed in ways which would have had some of them subject to arrest in many parts of the Imperium. Rugged-looking men in heavy, durable clothing, frequently torn or muddy, were probably prospectors or miners. Others, mostly women, wore flamboyant, even indecent garments, while others again wore almost nothing, dressed in rags. Ruglo touched his companion on the arm.
"This looks like a place to find out what's going on."
They went inside. At the bar, it was something of a relief to find that almost any kind of money was accepted. He had been in places where the local Imperial ruler, quite illegally, decreed all trade to be in his own local money, making a profit on the currency exchange. Ruglo bought two mugs of a watery, evil-smelling brew, which he brought to the table. From its gingery taste, he guessed it was made from some vegetable root. Kaladin sipped his with distaste and played nervously with his mug. It was plain he felt intimidated by the company around them. Ruglo had left his plastic gun behind, and instead had a lethal needle gun and a small las pistol hidden on his person. He had found it an advantage to show no visible weapons. It made people weary of him once they knew he was a trader. It was always assumed that a merchant would be armed.
"Why are we here?" Kaladin asked plaintively.
"The business on Apex 5 left me low in both trade goods and money. I need to build up my business without interference, informally, so to speak, before I have the wherewithal to enter a more regular trade. Sometimes one can pick up valuable items quite cheaply in a place like this."
While speaking, Kaladin had been casting his bland, sun-reddened face about the drinking hall. Suddenly, he stopped, his jaw dropping.
"What by his mightiness is that?"
He was staring at a figure leaning nonchalantly against the bar, surveying the general scene with glittering eyes. Taller than most men and slender, the figure had a head that was partly ovoid, partly angular, as if moulded by a whimsical sculptor, and it wore a fixed, supercilious expression. The figure was humanoid, but not human. It was not even organic. It was a machine, but not one made by the hand of man. An electric blue cloak covered it. Beneath that could be seen a pearl-grey sheen.
"A robot?" Kaladin said, staring openly.
Ruggalo let out his breath slowly.
"Not one made by human hand."
Kaladin realized that he was right. The mechanical creatures of the Sacred Adeptus Mechanicus were clumsy, clanking beasts of burden, with little intelligence, most often used as bomb-carrying cannon fodder. This machine creature was a thing of grace and beauty, and it had an air of self-assurance about it.
"So, there are aliens here,"
he said in a tremulous voice. But Ruggalo had already left the table. He strode to the bar to confront the robot. He could see at once that its body shell was neither metal nor plastic, but some other glistening material. A shiver of excitement went through him.
What might this robot be worth on more civilized worlds?
He had to look up at the mysterious construct to speak to it.
"Who owns you?"
he said in a quiet but demanding voice. After a pause, the answer came in a distant, ghostly voice, as if from someone talking in his sleep.
"Whoever can overcome me will own me. No one else."
It was a more intelligent answer than a human-made robot could ever have given. In the human world, an artificial brain would never have been able to manage such enigmatic phrasing. He returned to the table.
"It's alien, all right," he muttered to Kaladin.
"What sort of aliens?"
"I don't know, but..."
Ruggalo swallowed hard, looking around him again as if searching for them, whatever they were.
"Have you ever heard of Eldar?"
"Are they anything to do with orcs?"
Ruggalo shook his head. To most people, an alien was just an alien. Ask the average person for the name of any particular alien race, and orcs was the answer one got, if any. He began to explain in a low, hurried voice, glancing up at the robot every so often.
"I'm not sure myself if they are real or mythical, but the Eldar are said to be an ancient, non-human race, adept at making robots. The way I heard it, every Eldar wears a special gemstone on his breast. It's a spirit stone, which absorbs the wearer's experiences. When the Eldar dies, the stone contains his spirit. It can be put in a machine or robot and is able to animate it. In that way, the Eldar comes back to life again, usually in order to fight in a battle or something."
He stopped, searching his mind.
"There's a word for these spirit-animated fighting robots. Wraithguards."
He nodded his head towards the figure at the bar.
"I think that might be a Wraithguard."
Kaladin stared at the humanoid machine, revulsion contorting his pale features.
"Alien art. Disgusting. It even looks evil, just like that ship on the space ground. You see how different it is from the holy work of our tech priests, imbued as that is by the sacred light of the Emperor? Why, I'll bet those aliens have to invoke demons to make anything function at all."
"Yeah, I expect so,"
Ruggalo responded absently. He had to admit that both the robot and the coloured spaceship looked very strange, even sinister. but he had been exposed to alien tech arts several times before, and was less inclined to be religious about the subject. Just the same, he was far from sure of his own explanation. The Wraith Guard, if that was what it really was neither armoured nor armed. Also, it bore no markings, and he had heard that Eldar society was elaborately colourful. In any case, what was it doing on a human world? He remembered something else he had heard. The spirit in a Wraith Guard lived a dreamlike, almost somnambulistic experience. Perhaps it had somehow wandered away from where it belonged, got lost, or had been abandoned. He didn't believe the robot's claim to have no owner. How it had ended up in Caligula was a mystery in itself, but it could not possibly have survived among humans without becoming enslaved. Someone must have control over it. At that moment, someone sidled up to the Wraith Guard, muttered to it briefly, and stood close by with a propositional air, giving Ruggalo a single questioning glance. He was a small, middle-aged man with a mild, round face, lined as if with habitual anxiety, his eyes an affable blue. His apparel was simple, a caress singlet, blue doublet, with a pale green beret peaked at the front. Ruggalo rose once more to approach the stranger and spoke politely, but with the tone of one accustomed to being given an answer.
"Are you the owner of this machine?"
Smiling, the other shook his head and pointed to the further end of the long bar. There, invisible until a knot of people moved out of the way, was another extraordinary figure, lounging against the counter in exactly the same way as the wayward Wraith Guard. This alone drew Ruggalo's attention to him. Robots were nothing if not imitative, and the Eldar machine would most likely ape its master. Attentively, Ruggalo fixed his gaze on him. He was about the same height as the robot, but there the resemblance ended. The man was of stick-like thinness. Stiff black hair hung up like fire-blasted wheat from his narrow skull. His clothing was also black, but tatty and crumpled, and it stuck to his skinny frame as if it had not been removed for years. As for his face, it was wild. The eyes staring, the bony nose jutting from between sallow cheeks, ears jutting from either side of his head, as though they had been glued there as an afterthought. More extraordinary than his appearance was his behaviour. He appeared to be haranguing the people around him, though they took absolutely no notice, gesticulating jerkily, bending his angular body this way and that as if demented, which possibly he was. Ruggalo rose and made towards him through the throng. As he came nearer, he heard the man's words through the hubbub, spoken in a strident tone as if he addressed not those around him, but instead was conducting an inner monologue.
"Have I not discovered the roots of my desire? You, who hear me, do you not see that all is but a plain dish and a nothingness? No, because you have never been where I have been. You have not seen the roots of my desire. You have not seen. You have not seen."
He paused to drink deeply from a tankard he had been waving in his right hand. The brew seemed to disappear with extraordinary rapidity into his narrow mouth and down into his stomach, without the necessity of his swallowing. He belched, then continued his nonsensical tirade.
"None can know the roots of my desire. None who has not been there. Is that not so, my dearest one? Tell him of my roots."
As he spoke, he flung out an arm to indicate a young woman sitting by herself nearby, her arms resting on a table. She smiled up at Ruggalo and licked her lips. As soon as he set eyes on her, Ruggalo received an impression of seductive wildness that was almost vampiric. She had a round, smooth face which, for all its prettiness, reminded him of some cat-like beast. Her hair was jet black and slicked down, her eyes were green and oval, and rarely blinked, giving her a hypnotic, staring quality. Her costume consisted of a brief basque of dark blue, revealing her full figure and smooth, plump limbs. As she leaned on the table, he could see how full her rump was, pressing down on the seat. He stared back, startled. The girl rose and stepped to him. Her movements were lithe. Still smiling, she raised a hand and drew her fingernail down the side of his neck. The sensation sent a jolt of pleasure through him. He found himself unable to meet her steady gaze and shuffled away from her touch. In a thrilling contralto, she spoke, "My name is Angelica. What is yours?"
"Maynard Ruggolo," he responded gruffly.
Then he turned to the tall, black-clad man whose face, seen close up, was flaky and walled, as though he suffered from an affliction of the skin.
"I'm told you own that robot I see standing down the bar."
The tall stranger turned to give Ruggolo an unnerving stare.
"Ah, the Wraith Guard, my friend and colleague. Kyla gave out the information, no doubt, without even charging for it. Always too generous, always too loose with his tongue."
So it was a Wraith Guard. Ruggolo was disappointed that the man knew the origin of the machine. He had been hoping to acquire it for a trifling fraction of its real value. Not that he was giving up yet.
"Oh, I have seen its like a few times before," he said offhandedly. "Generally, they are not worth much. As servants, they are useless. Also, they are apt to break down a good deal, and no one in the Imperium knows how to repair them. They are Eldar made. Still, I know where I could dispose of it as a curiosity, and would be willing to take it off your hands."
"Ha ha! You hope to cheat an honest trader. By the roots of my desire, I should squeeze your giblets and make wine of your gall. Is he not a man of deceit and treachery, my darling Angelica? My slacking of deepest desires."
Angelica's green eyes were on Ruggolo, seeming to pierce him with her emerald stare.
"He is indeed nothing but lies and plots and manipulations, my dearest Gundrum. I see them laid out in his mind like an evil map. He thinks that we are but simpletons, being far from the great cities and worlds where men swarm like ants. He thinks that for a few coins, for a few baubles, for a few pleasant words, he can take from us the Wraith Guard and all the rest of our hard-won treasures. In truth, he could not raise the Wraith Guard's value even if he were to sell all that he possesses and then sell his soul into the bargain too. But then a soul is a little thing, worth less than a pebble on a beach."
All the while that she spoke in her enchanting voice, Angelica continued smiling at Ruggolo as if she loved him and wanted only to please him. At first, Ruggolo was entranced. Then he shook himself and laughed.
"I can see that I've met my match," he congratulated, and turned back to Gundrum. "So you are a trader too," he said.
"We would not sell you the Wraith Guard, even if you had its price," Gundrum told him, in a more friendly tone. "It is destined for the palace of the Imperial Commander to become one of his pets. It is his hobby to have exotic and beautiful animals roaming freely about his spacious halls. The Wraith Guard will look well among them."
"I see. I confess I'm curious to know where you got it."
"I'm sure you are."
Gundrum was looking over Ruggolo's shoulder. Turning, Ruggolo saw what had attracted his attention. Three men had advanced on Pelor Caladan and surrounded his table. Leaning over him, mouthing something at him. One was bull-necked and burly, a heavy pistol of some sort thrust into his belt, his hairy chest bared. His two companions were smaller and wraithish-looking, the sort Ruggolo had seen on countless planets, usually making a living as thieves or hired mercenaries. Caladan looked terrified, especially when one of the latter pulled his head up by his hair and placed the edge of a knife at his throat. Gundrum suddenly raised his voice and shouted in a language unknown to Ruggolo.
"Hek krala, elefor shwalaha!"
Swift as a snake creature on some death world, the Eldar Wraith Guard moved into action. Its electric blue cloak swept behind its shoulder like the wings of an eagle as it leapt to the table, revealing in full the glittering beauty that was its naked form. First of all, it seized in one hand the wrist holding the blade, which threatened Caladan. There was an audible snap as the bones of the forearm, both ulna and radius, broke, and a cry of pain as the ruffian fell back, hand dangling, knife clattering to the floor. The bare-chested leader of the trio was not slow. He yanked his weapon, a slug gun, from his belt, and managed to get in a shot. The heavy metal bullet ricocheted off the robot's pearly casing, without leaving a dent. By then, the pistol was in the Wraith Guard's grip. It closed its fist. Fragments and shards, all that remained of the gun, tinkled to the tabletop. Moving like a dancer, the Eldar machine seized the weapon's owner, turned him upside down and brought his head down with force on the stone floor. The third assailant had already fled, along with his injured friend. Calmly, the Wraith Guard returned to the bar and lounged against it as before, surveying the scene. The man Gundrum had called Quyla had disappeared. Ruggalo had been pushing his way through the crowd. Now he reached the shaking Kaladin, looking down on the unconscious form slumped on the floor.
"What did they want?"
Kaladin shrugged.
"They'd run out of money for drink, that's all."
Gundrum strolled up and watched as the body was dragged through the door and dumped in the dirt of the street. No one bothered to check whether the bare-breasted man was still breathing. Ruggalo now noticed distinct circular lines around the Wraith Guard's wrists. He realized that its hands were detachable, probably so they could be replaced with weapons. He turned to Gundrum.
"You must be getting a very good price for your property. Not only is it unusual to look at, you'll be losing an excellent bodyguard."
"Rarity always commands a good price. Is that not the supreme dictum of we who buy and sell?" Gundrum challenged. "Though, my friend, in this region, the rare, the special, are not always as rare and special as you might think. For I would say you come from more orderly parts, or you would not have left your companion defenseless."
"Yes, well, where did you get the Wraith Guard?"
He had not expected an answer to his question, but Gundrum gestured him to a canvas flap near the end of the bar.
"You wish to trade? There is a more private place."
With a nod to the barman, he led them through the flap and into a small compartment made of a fabric so thick that no sunlight penetrated it, so that it had to be lit by a lamp on a hook. Ushering Kaladin in behind him, Ruggalo glanced round to see the cat-faced girl following them. He held the door open for her, her bosom pressed against him as she squeezed through. As soon as they were seated, the strange trader became direct.
"You have a ship?"
Ruggalo nodded.
"You wish to buy?"
"It depends what you have."
"Oh, you will want what we have. But what will you buy it with?"
Ruggalo thought of the small hoard of trade goods in his hold, a few weapons, some ornaments, some odds and ends, and of his limited amount of currency. It had been some time since he had possessed any real amount of working capital. That was why he had been working, in effect, as a lowly merchantman, transporting other people's goods for a modest payment. A humiliating comedown, which had ended in his landing at Gendova with a cargo of rotting peach apples. Just the same, he sensed a tantalizing opportunity here. So Gundrum's next words were music to his ears.
"We may be able to help one another. You think of me as rough, uncouth frontiersman, do you not? But no, it is you who is ignorant and untutored. It is you who is from the wilderness, from deep in the Imperium where everything is stultified by laws. Laws and more laws. From here on, one becomes free. From here, one travels off the Imperial charts to far, strange, distant places. There, I found the roots of my desire. There, I became changed. Everything is changed there."
He leaned close to Ruggalo, his voice dropped to a low, conspiratorial tone.
"Even space is different."
Ruggalo frowned his puzzlement.
"Space can't be different," he said. "It's the same everywhere."
His frown cleared.
"Do you mean the big warp storm? The Eye of Terror? It's not space that's different, it's the Immaterium.
It forms a big vortex. Gundrum was half crazed, he reminded himself. He didn't know the difference between real space and the warp. He had probably misunderstood remarks made by his navigator. Navigator? Where did someone as mentally deranged as Gundrum seem to be acquire one of those? He put the thought out of his mind. Angelica had not joined them at the table. Instead, she stood behind Ruggolo. Now she placed her hands on his shoulders and began to massage them gently. A feeling of pure pleasure suffused through him, sending him into a trance. For a moment, he seemed to go spinning through a dark tunnel and was robbed of his will. Then, with a gasp, he broke away from her, his chair scraping on the floor. He looked up at her, then at Gundrum. Kaladin, he noticed, was looking on with a blank expression on his face.
Is she from the Eye too? Angelica. She is my own very dear sister, who accompanies me on all my journeys. It is she who pilots my spacecraft. She is changed too, my dear sister Angelica.
She's your pilot? Kaladin broke in, sounding mystified. But she isn't a navigator.
An awkward silence was all the answer he got, until, after a long pause, Angelica broke into sudden, trilling laughter.
Why do you wish to do business with a stranger you have only just met? Ruggolo asked suspiciously.
Gundrum laughed.
A man without resources who tries to buy a Wraithguard must be a good trader. Besides, you look like a man who is willing to take chances. Now, here is what is at stake. My Angelica knows a route into the Eye, but there is not much profit to be made bringing out goods from there and selling them in the fringe worlds. They will command a higher price elsewhere. Now I myself do not wish to trade deeper into the Imperium. It is unfamiliar to me. There are too many rules. I have no charter. Besides,
he twisted his peculiar form into a travesty of a shrug.
There are too many priests, preachers, and arbitrators. Anyone who looks the least bit odd receives their attention, so I'm told. You, however...
Ruggolo was feeling excited. What a piece of luck. His natural optimism began to soar like a bird.
I knew things would start looking up again, he told himself. That's all very well, he said calmly, hiding his feelings. But what sort of goods are we talking about? You come directly to the point. By the roots of my desire, that is good. By the Byzos, by the great gods, by the greatest whirl of wonders the galaxy has seen, you must pass through reefs, through storms, you must twist and turn, and when you come to the universe of marvels which the gods have prepared, and there is our treasure house. Within the Eye are more worlds than can be named. Upon those worlds are artisans, craftsmen, distillers of liqueurs, consummate, intricate, miraculous. What would the cognoscente of the rich worlds of the Imperium not pay for them? I am tired of supplying our Imperial commander with his toys. An Imperial commander is only as wealthy as the planet he rules, and ours is therefore impoverished, having for subjects rogues and vagabonds.
Angelica moved aside, giving Ruggolo a passing caress which sent shivers running through him.
Let me show you one or two trinkets to reveal to you what I mean, Gundrum said.
He shrugged something off his shoulder. Ruggolo wondered why he had not noticed before that he carried a shoulder bag as black as the ragged garments he wore. Then again, it clung so tightly to his form as to be almost invisible. Then, as he placed it on the table, it seemed to Ruggolo that it expanded to several times its former size. The trader from the Eye of Terror dipped his hand in the bag and brought out a box about the size of a large book. It was made of a reddish wood, which gave off a faint perfume. As it was laid on the table, Ruggolo saw that it was decorated with relief carvings of what he presumed were imaginary beasts, or, if not, than denizens of some fabulous planet unknown to him. The carvings were very faint, however. They seemed to disappear and reappear as the box was moved. With an air of deliberation, Gundrum lifted open the box's hinged lid. It seemed to exude a rosy glow, from which ascended a large moth-like creature, coloured red and orange. The moth began flittering about the room, and as it flew, it left a trail of golden light behind it in the air. Steadily, the space of the room was filling with criss-crossing luminous lines. At the same time, like the lighting of a candle, a feeling of contentment began to grow in Ruggalo's chest. He felt that he could watch the fluttering moth forever, could wait until the whole room was one mass of glowing lines in which he was trapped. What then? He saw a glaze in Kaladin's eyes and knew that he was experiencing the same. Not Angelica, however. She was fidgeting and writhing, licking her lips, her face enraptured. She was feeling some different, more stimulating pleasure. It was utterly impassive. With a snap, he suddenly shut the box. The moth-like creature, together with the golden mesh it was creating, vanished at once.
"A pretty thing, is it not?" said Gundrum enticingly. "An ideal after-dinner entertainment to offer some high-born lady. If one could mass-produce such a trinket, one would make a fortune. The artisans of the eye unfortunately work by hand, and tire of producing the same item over and over. Hence, rarity is the norm. Now, take a look at this."
He returned the box to the bag, then felt about in it before withdrawing another object, which he also placed on the table. It had the form of an ornate pagoda, tinseled and trimmed with multicoloured metal which flashed in the lamplight. It was considerably larger than the box with the moth in it. Ruggalo wondered how he had managed to hide both in the black bag. Discerning a movement within the pagoda, Ruggalo and Kaladin both leaned closer. There was indeed something going on inside it, a confused roiling and struggling, but the body of the pagoda was of frosted glass, and it was not possible to see within it clearly. Ruggalo then noticed that among the intricate decorations was a chute winding around the outside of the tower from top to bottom. It ended in a door in the shape of a gaping, fanged mouth. The thing was a toy helter-skelter. As he watched, a tiny doll figure emerged onto the platform which surrounded the crown of the tower like the brim of a hat. It looked for all the world like a real miniature human being, a man dressed in motley red and green clothing. Ruggalo marvelled at the craftsmanship which had gone into the mannequin, if it was not a holographic projection, which it did not seem to be. Almost immediately it went sliding down the chute, arms and legs waving, face staring up, its features distorted in utter panic. It seemed to be yelling something. As soon as it reached the bottom, it was swallowed up by the fanged mouth. Its place was taken by a female figure, which also went sliding down the helter-skelter, yellow gown billowing, legs kicking, arms raised imploringly, shouting and grimacing like the first. More mannequins followed, men, women, children, struggling, writhing, screaming as they followed one another down the chute in a seemingly endless procession.
"A story accompanies the toy," Gundrum explained. "A gruesome tale to tell one's children."
"Maybe another time," Ruggalo mumbled, horrified.
Reluctantly, Gundrum replaced the pagoda. Mystifyingly, it made barely a bump under the folds of black cloth.
"Would you care for a taste of this liqueur? Men would sell their daughters for a bottle of this."
This time, the bag produced a small cask-shaped container of ribbed glass and four tiny cups, hardly bigger than acorns. Placing each on the table, Gundrum unstopped the bottle and very, very carefully poured measured amounts into the cups. The fluid which oozed into them was thick and syrupy, and seemed reluctant to leave the bottle. It almost seemed alive, or electric, sparkling, effervescing as it flowed, first amber, then scarlet, going on to an ever-changing succession of colours. Even when it had settled in the little glasses, it continued to seethe and change colour. Gundrum lifted his glass to his thin lips, took a quick swallow, then set it down again. Angelica did the same. Neither of them showed any reaction. Ruggalo, and a little more reluctantly, Kaladin, followed their example. Ruggalo had intended to take no more than a sip at first, but somehow the slug of liqueur spilled as one big drop into his mouth. It felt as though a flavour bomb was slowly exploding on his tongue. Fleetingly, everything he'd ever tasted, he experienced over again, bringing a delirious rush of past memories. First of all, the taste of every liqueur he had ever drunk, then other beverages, then delicious cold drinks, iced confectionery, delicacies, expensive foods. It was all over in a moment. He did not remember swallowing. The liqueur seemed to pour itself down his throat of its own volition, as if eager to get to his stomach. Then a savage jolt, like an electric shock, went through him, releasing a surge of exhilaration which blew through him like a roaring wind. He went quite rigid. Then it was over. Ruggalo relaxed, letting out an ecstatic sigh. "It's wonderful," he breathed. Kaladin was looking even paler than before. At that moment, the door flap was shoved open. A burly man strode into the room, taking in the scene at a glance. He seemed angry. He had an air of pent-up energy, like many on Caligula. His clothing was torn and dirty, as if getting dressed was an afterthought. His blonde hair was shorn close to his skull, the skin showing through the bristles. He looked down at the cask-shaped bottle, at the tiny glasses, at the black bag. He opened his mouth, revealing large, ragged teeth.
"What are you doing, Gundrun? Why was I not told of this?"
Hunched over the table, Gundrun looked up at the intruder, his body bending in apparently impossible places.
"Making contacts, Farfar. Making contacts. Why do you fret?"
The big man bent, rudely looking straight into Ruggalo's face, then into Kaladin's. Ruggalo got the same uncomfortable feeling he had seen from Angelica of having his character inspected in a way no normal person could. Then a big beefy fist was shaking in front of his nose.
"You are after our secrets. You want to get into the eye. You want to take our trade."
Angelica chuckled.
"And what would that avail him, Foy Foy? How many merchant adventurers has the eye swallowed up? Many have gone in. How many have come out? Only Gundrum and myself." "Of course," she added in a teasing tone, "I could always decide to offer him my services. Where would you and Gundrum be then?"
Fofo growled. He rounded on Ruggalo again.
"Stay out of the eye, do you hear me? That's our business."
"I've no intention of going there," Ruggalo said,
trying to sound as though he meant it.
"It's not possible to navigate there, is it?"
As soon as the words were out of his mouth, he regretted them. He had unthinkingly revealed his true thoughts. Gundrum and Angelica had succeeded in going in and coming out again. Therefore, it was possible. And what one person had done, another could do. And look what delightful trade goods could be obtained there, probably quite cheaply, though Gundrum had not explained what he used to pay for them. It would be much better to obtain these goods at source, if at all possible. If he simply acted as Gundrum's go-between, he would realise only a small fraction of their value. Frantically, he tried to suppress this line of reasoning. This Gundrum was not a fool. Any trader worth his salt was adept at guessing what another was thinking. He could only hope that he and his sister were so confident of their secret route that they did not believe anyone else could find or use it.
"I should kill you now," Fofo said in an aggravated tone,
though he sounded a little mollified by what Angelica had said. He turned to go. And then it happened. Ruggalo saw the back of his head smooth out, the cropped hair disappearing, the skin puckered, and then formed itself into a second face, an ugly, dwarfish face, with protruding lips and a snub nose, glaring out from the back of Fofo's skull, and grimacing at Ruggalo as if trying to attract his attention. A high, squeaky, chattering voice came from it, a shrill voice of panic.
No, 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 don't go, don't go, no, 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 don't go.
It was still screeching at him as Fofo went through the door, closing it behind him. No one else gave any sign of having seen the apparition or of hearing the voice. Ruggalo shook his head, trying to clear it. He couldn't believe what he had seen. It was a hallucination, he decided, brought on by the liqueur. A powerful potion, indeed. Gundrum scooped up both bottle and cups and returned them to the bag. Ruggalo could not contain himself.
"I need hardly point out," he said slowly, "that the bag you carry is hardly large enough to contain anything you have taken out of it, or put back into it."
"This?" Gundrum picked the bag up, its silky material contracted as he did so, folding in on itself until it was no more than a slip of cloth, smaller than a handkerchief, which he tucked into a side pocket.
"The eye has clever weavers, too," he said, his small mouth pursing in the suggestion of a smile. "Now, here is something else for you."
Dipping into the same pocket, he displayed in the palm of his hand a number of small crystals or gemstones. They were pale blue in colour, translucent but otherwise unremarkable. Ruggalo picked one up, inspecting it. It was not an amethyst or anything he recognised.
"Are they valuable?" "Not as gems. They are dream jewels. Put this under your pillow at night, and what you dream of can become real."
Ruggalo was disappointed.
"That's all it is. A good luck charm." "No, no, you misunderstand. It really does make material objects out of dreams. A wonderful device to give a child. It might dream of some marvellous toy, game, or whatever it desires. And there it will be at the bottom of the bed in the morning. Is that not miraculous?"
"Certainly, if true," Ruggalo said doubtfully.
He was trying to imagine what kind of technical art could make such a thing possible.
"Try it. Take that one with you."
Gundrum motioned to his sister. Silently, the two left the canvas room. Holding the gem up to the lamplight, Ruggalo tried to examine it more closely, but it still seemed unremarkable. The light filtered through it, as it might any uncut precious stone or lump of crystal. Perhaps there were two or three shadowy patches in it, which normally he would have thought of as flaws. He put it away in the purse he carried inside his jerkin. The pair emerged back into the drinking hall. Gundrum and Angelica were gone, along with the Eldar Wraithguard. Fofo was skulking along the other end of the bar, talking with Quala. Ruggalo sent Kaladin to the bar for two more tankards of the evil-tasting brew. Before the navigator had time to return, he became aware of someone else sliding into the seat beside him. He looked sideways. It was an elderly man whose face was half hidden by a swathe of cloth, which went over his head like a burnous, such as he had seen worn by those living in very hot deserts. Ruggalo could see why. Close up, it was possible to glimpse behind the burnous. The left half of the man's face seemed to have melted, the flesh to have run like molten lead. Otherwise, he wore a plain tabard and leggings. Making no apology for his presence, the man spoke directly.
"Do not travel off the charts. You will regret it most seriously."
"What makes you think I intend to do that?"
"I have lived here a long time. I am used to seeing men like you lucking for profit. I have seen them fall to temptation. If you travel into the galactic whirlpool, you will lose your souls. The worlds of the Eye are infested with demons. Do not go there,"
Ruggalo said.
"Have you been there?"
He received no answer. The man stood up quickly, as though the question frightened him, and strode off. Kaladin returned with the tankards. Thoughtfully, Ruggalo drank.